Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Now, here's an interesting quartet on a journey through Asia. Iconic television stars William Shatner and Henry Winkler, alongside iconic sports stars Terry Bradshaw and George Foreman. Throw in comedian Jeff Dye, and you have Better Late Than Never, coming to NBC Tuesday night. Executive producer Jason Ehrlich joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Hallmark Channel is off to the races with Chesapeake Shores, its latest Sunday night drama. A prominent Emmy-winning member of a famous family behind the television scene is on board. John Tinker, and you will hear him next half hour. And no office of this program would be complete without our annual visit with New York Television Festival Executive Director Terrence Gray. His enterprise keeps expanding the world of independent content, and you'll hear what new directions are in store for 2016 next hour. Also ahead, the answer to this week's classic trivia question, and we remember Political Talk TV's Transformer, Sean McLaughlin. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Delighted to have you with us for this earlier than normal Friday edition of the program All About Television. We are normally with you 3 hours later, so we welcome those of you that are just getting up on the West Coast and just getting into lunch on the East Coast. We have a great 90 minutes in store for you today, and we invite you, as always, to be part of the program. Well, by the way, 85 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. We are definitely out of the heat wave, and the temperature is looking better and better as the weekend approaches. Like I said, great 90 minutes in store, wonderful news from all over the place coming your way, and we invite you to play a role in the program. It's so easy. If you have a question or comment, raise your voice, use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio. We've got our chat room going as well. You will find it at our homepage. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Simon Apple 04 is the name of the room, and guest 475 is already in it. So use the phone or the room. Either way, we will hear you. And, of course, while the program is on the air, you can connect it with others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon in your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. One news note before we get to our first guest. Any moment now, Viacom is expected to announce that they'll have a change at the top. Philippe Dumont out as chief executive officer, and Tom Dooley in, on at least an interim basis. If anything breaks on that note before we leave you, we will bring it to you. Of course, Viacom are the folks behind such cable networks as MTV, VH1, and Spike TV. Once again, we expect any moment now an announcement from Viacom that Philippe Dumont is out as chief executive officer, and Tom Dooley is in. NBC's newest program coming up on Tuesday night is Better Late Than Ever. It's based on a format from Asia, which takes celebrities and sports stars and brings them together for an unforgettable journey. The cast and executive producers includes Craig Sazan and Neil Moran, the folks behind such live sports for NBC in recent years as The Wiz Live, The Sound of Music Live, and more. Joining us live from Los Angeles is one of the other executive producers of this series. We welcome in Jason Ehrlich. Hi, Jason.
Hey, Simon. Thanks for having me on. How are you?
Very, very well, thank you. How are things going getting this series together where you have two of the most iconic TV people around with two of the most iconic sports people?
Well, we can't wait for Tuesday night. We're very excited, and we really feel like we have something special. It's certainly entertaining, and it's been nice watching and reading all the press that's coming in the reviews and seeing words like hysterical and things like that. This has been a long, you know, we've been putting this show together for quite a long time, and I have to say, you know, I've said it before, I think I must be the luckiest guy in the world to have gotten to take four of icons and personal idols on a trip through Asia, and I'm glad that we all made it back in one piece. And getting to know Jeff as well, who is just, I mean, the guy's incredibly funny and so wonderful. He's like the only carried his own weight amongst these four legends. So we're doing great over here. We're great.
And it sounds, Jason, like from the get-go, you wanted William Shatner and Henry Winkler and George Foreman and Terry Bradshaw all involved. Is that fair to say that all along this was the dream team you wanted?
Yeah, we could not have gotten luckier with the guys. And what was really fun at the beginning was to be able to approach them on a project that I think for most of them was probably outside their comfort zone. But to sit down with them and say, all right, here's what we're thinking, this once in a lifetime, I guess all expenses paid, trip to go out and see the world, and to have them come in into the room and, you know, somewhat skeptical, and to leave going, how could I say no to this? This, you know, Henry especially, it was like, what a dream to be able to go out and see the world and do it in this way. And especially for Bill, he'd never been to Asia before. And I guess it is his final frontier, if you will, pardon the bad pun. But you know, when we sat down and talked with him, he just thought, he's always wanted to go. He's never been to Asia, and he's fascinated by both Asia and I think everything. And so for him, it was a no brainer. And he had, you know, he's done so much in his life, and it was such a pleasure to be able to take Bill, who I love, I just adore, and to introduce him to new experiences. And he really opened up and embraced those experiences. I mean, what's interesting is the different ways that each of the guys approached the challenges and experiences that we faced. You know, I think remarkably, let's start with Henry. Henry is incredible. I mean, I just love him. He, I think, took care of me as much as I took care of him out there. And, you know, he approached every experience, whether it was bizarre or strange or foreign, kind of he approached it and, you know, he would be nervous about something. He would be uncomfortable, and he would use that energy and push through that and experience it. And that's such an admirable quality. You know, the definition of courage is not to not be afraid of something. It's to be afraid and to do it anyway. And that was really impressive. And with Bill, he approached it from a very systematic measure where he wanted to experience every kind of adventure. I mean, here's Bill, who is just unbelievable, who went with us to Asia, and he had just come from a cross-country motorcycle road trip, which is just, he just seizes the day. He's the epitome of carpe diem, and he really wants to embrace, feel, smell, eat, taste, touch as much as he can and just soak up all of life. And the opposite, I think, of that is Terry Bradshaw. And Terry Bradshaw, you know, kind of ran from everything, and I think is very funny. And, you know, we put him in situations that were incredibly uncomfortable. There's a clip online right now that they released where we go to a yakitori restaurant in the middle of Tokyo. And this is something that – and this gives the different approaches perfectly. We walk into this restaurant. It's incredibly, you know, strange. And the menu there that they serve has – every part of every animal that you can imagine. And Bill wants to experience it. He wants to go off the beaten path, a place that most people don't go to taste and try food. That's what this trip is all about. And Henry kind of says, look, never in a million years would I want to eat any of this stuff, but this is what this is all about. Try this adventure. So as much as I don't like it, I'll push through it and I'll try it. And then Terry says, can I just have some French fries? And he just does not want to be a part of it, brings out his homegrown barbecue sauce, and he slaps it on and he eats it because he's had such an incredible life that, you know, he wants to try everything. He grew up incredibly impoverished. And from that, you know, he was eating all kinds of things, and he wouldn't think twice about it. So they sit down, they start eating, and they kind of get into it. You know, this one's not bad. This is pretty good. This is not bad. And then Henry calls the waitress over and says, excuse me, what is this? And the waitress says, pork vagina. And Henry's face is priceless. And the guys, then what happens next is the best moment of all, which is they start cracking jokes and they start laughing. And that's what this show is all about. It's about these five guys laughing together, going on this journey, broadening their horizons, and then you as a viewer get to sit and experience all that with them. And I've always said I had a number one rule when we were editing, which is if they're laughing, it goes in because it's infectious. It's so lovable. And you see these guys that you love loving each other, and I can't get enough of it. It's great.
The program we're talking about is Better Late Than Ever. It is the latest series from NBC, and it's on this Tuesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. And we're talking to one of the executive producers, Jason Ehrlich. He joins us live from Los Angeles at half hour on this earlier than normal Friday edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum here with you from the other coast, Newark, New York. Delighted to have you with us, whether you're just waking up on the West Coast or getting into lunch on the East Coast. If you have a question or comment for Jason, give us a ring at 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04, by name. We have guests 515 and 538 in the room. We're back on a normal time period on Monday, where we'll have the first of three episodes coming your way that week. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, all at the same hour. And coming up on Monday's program, we have another 90-minute show in store for you. From the new Discovery Channel miniseries, Harley and the Davidsons. Yes, it's about the folks that made that motorcycle company work. We've got executive producer John Goldwyn. And then if you think toucans are only on the boxes of Kellogg's Fruit Loops, well, an Animal Planet documentary special might get your thinking a little bit differently, maybe a lot differently. It's called Toucan Nation, and we'll speak with its director, Paula Heredia. And we just signed in, as well, the Emmy-nominated director from House with a brand-new show coming up next month on Cinemax. He's called Quarry. He is directing all the episodes. He's also the executive producer. Our good friend from Banshee, Greg Thomas, will join us live. It's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, another 90-minute edition coming your way on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What's very ironic, Jason, about your series is it's based on an Asian format. And I'm curious whether it was just a case of naturally adapting this pretty much as is, or did you have to make any special in-translation changes?
Well, that's a great question. Well, it's interesting. It was an original Korean format. In their season, they travel through Europe. They start in Paris and head through Switzerland. And one thing that is incredibly common and that connects these two shows is it's about these guys enjoying each other, experiencing the world. And these guys, equally in the Korean version, you have extremely, incredibly accomplished celebrities who have lived extraordinary lives. And then suddenly they're put in somewhat pedestrian surroundings, like a train station or sitting in a field and eating ice cream. And it's funny to see how that expands their horizons. And I think that those are two parallels between the Korean version and the American version. One thing we noticed very quickly is that I think for an American audience, we needed to move a lot quicker. The Korean version spends almost their first hour in the train station, exploring the train station in Paris and navigating the train station. That for us played for about 4 to 4 minutes, maybe. And for an American audience's taste, I think they want to see things keep moving. And, you know, you'll notice a very fast pace for the show, which kind of gets you through it. And, you know, there are these moments where we do sit down and connect with the guys, especially in the first episode. George Foreman tells an incredible story. They're sitting around in a restaurant that they come to, and they start talking about fear and using fear as a motivator, which was fascinating to hear. You know, just being a fly on the wall for this show, I learned so much about these legends and these guys that are so incredibly accomplished, and to hear that fear is what drove them, you know, in everything that they did. You know, the character Fonz was created almost as a bravado for Henry to hide behind. He became this guy, and he could do anything. And then when you hear George Foreman talk about how, and this is actually when Henry and George first sat down, when we were at the NBC offices with Chuck LaBella, who brought them all together, Henry and George sat down, and they started talking about fear instantly, and they clicked instantly on that. And George told this incredible story. He said, I used to be so terrified every time I got in that ring. And I would kind of just, as soon as that bell would ring, I'd close my eyes and I'd just start swinging. And the next thing I knew, the guy would be on the ground because I was so terrified of getting hit. And to hear this giant who, you know, had done for a living what he did. I mean, he was the champion of the world twice. And to hear him say that every time he was terrified to be in that ring, I thought was fascinating. And then in the first episode, he retells that, but he also says the only time he wasn't afraid to get into a ring was against Muhammad Ali. For some reason, he was at a place in his life that I walked in there, I didn't feel that fear, and the next thing I knew, they were counting me out. And that fear, you know, kind of, it was the lack of that fear is kind of what drove him to lose that fight. And that was a historic, you know, for all of us, that was a historic moment in boxing. And to hear the behind the scenes and what was going on in his head, I think is so fascinating. So I'm not, I can get back to the question, but you know, that's one of the best things about the show is that you get to see them experience these different cultures, but it's more about them experiencing each other and experiencing themselves and learning about themselves, you know, throughout the process.
And same with that, Jason, how much of the episodes, whether it was in Tokyo or Chiang Mai in Korea or wherever they went, how much of it was planning to have at least some part of that trip fulfill one of our four or five, you know, things they want to do in life there? And how much of it was unplanned, as in, you know, like Shatner telling George Foreman, try this, or Winkler telling Bradshaw, try that, you know, where it was off the cuff, we're going to go this direction in the city, who knows where it's going to end up, but let's see what turns out.
Well, you know, we started when we brought, when we talked to the guys, we started and asked them and saying, you know, okay, we're going to Tokyo. What do you want to see in Tokyo? What's one thing that we didn't want them to leave and feel like they had missed something? So for all, Mount Fuji was on everybody's list. But there were a lot of things in Tokyo that they didn't know about. For instance, like the Capsule Hotel. And that gives you, you know, that's an important piece, I think, of the journey, because it's about experiencing everything. You know, this isn't high-end luxury tour for these guys. We put them in places that they would remember. You know, how many hotels have you stayed in and you'll never remember them for as long as you live. You'll never forget the Capsule Hotel. You'll never forget the presidential suite at the Intercontinental in Hong Kong that overlooks Victoria Harbor. You'll never forget the Dara Devi Hotel in Chiang Mai, which is I think one of my favorite hotels in the entire world, and I've been fortunate enough to travel there for work a few times and stay there. So we wanted the food, the hotels, the experiences, all of these things to be special, something they would remember forever. And what, there's a great moment in the first episode when they're in the Capsule Hotel, and Bill looks at Henry and he says, you know what, you know, I don't mind being here because this is all about experiencing it. We get to be in this hovel is what he calls it, but they'll never forget it. And I love that. And that continues through the entire journey all the way to in Chiang Mai. They get to ride and have this incredible elephant experience. And it's something that I know personally from Henry has resonated with him deeply as one of the most powerful things that he's experienced. And I hope he doesn't mind, but I can tell you, I took a photo of him hugging this elephant. I believe the elephant's name was Natasha. And he was so connected with this elephant that the elephant leaned into him. And right as that happened, I snapped a photo. I sent it to him. And to this day, it's the home screen on his phone, which I just love. And it's this moment that he will never forget of Henry connecting with this massive animal. And that, to me, what this trip was all about, is putting them in experiences, high-end, low-end, any end, to give them something that they will remember for the rest of their lives. And to that I would also add, I hope, my hope and goal is that people watch the show and enjoy it and we get great numbers, of course. But I also really hope this becomes a thing. And I hope that people are sitting at home watching the show and they, you know, nudge the other, or their husband or wife on the shoulder and say, let's go do that trip. we have to go to there. And people, you know, to be inspired to take their own better late than never journey, because you can do this at any time. It's not about being, you can do this at any age. You can be a teenager and say, I want to go see this place. I want to go do something place. And yes, you can tick things off your bucket list, but there are things that you'll find there that you never even knew you wanted to do. And that's what's so great. So I hope we do entertain people, they laugh, they love the show, and that they're inspired to take their own better late than never journeys.
And this particular journey begins Tuesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on NBC. We've got the executive producer of Better Late Than Never, Jason Ho, joining us live from Los Angeles this half hour right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted you with us, whatever time zone you're in, catching up on your Friday. If you have a question or comment for our guest, give it a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up on our next half hour, an Emmy-winning member of a very prominent family, one of whose used to run NBC, Grant Tinker. We're talking about Emmy winner John Tinker and his new enterprise, The Chesapeake Shores, which premiered this past Sunday on the Hallmark Channel. He joins us next half hour. And then our annual visit with the head of the New York Television Festival, Terrence Gray, with me here in New Weber, York. Coming up next Wednesday on the special 90-day edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, not one, but two Emmy nominees this year. From Gotham, the cinematographer for that series, Crescenzo Natari, and one of the directors of Beef, one of three directors who's been nominated this year for their role on the show, director Dale Stern. Plus, rescheduled from recently, we've got the popular TV critic of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Robbo, and we'll get his thoughts about, among other things, what's coming up with the Emmys, some good viewing early on this fall season, and what the TV Critics Store had the last few weeks in Los Angeles. That's all coming up next Wednesday, special edition of our show, 90 minutes for you, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Before we leave things, talk about Jeff Dye, and what did you suspect his role was going to be early on, and how did his involvement transform over the course of doing the show?
Jeff Dye was, there was a, in the original Korean version, they took a younger actor with them. They actually duped him into coming in. They told him that he was going to be spending the summer on tour with one of the hottest K-pop bands, these two young, adorable girls. And then when he showed up to the airport, they surprised him, and he was taking these four grandpas through Europe. And we love that element of the show. And, you know, when we were looking, it was kind of a no-brainer. Jeff Dye had just done I Can Do That. He was so funny. And we thought Jeff would be the perfect person to take on this journey. He's somewhat, and I think he wouldn't mind me saying it, in some ways kind of clueless. And he provides a really incredible vehicle for the viewer to kind of experience this journey through. And he's not a know-it-all. He's not taking them on this tour. He's kind of going with them, but he's there to help make sure that everyone survives. Everybody comes back in one piece. And I got to hand it to Jeff, who is incredibly funny and talented. There are, and I said this to him, there are very few comedians who could have come on this trip, been embraced the way he was by these guys. I think some people could have gotten out there and they would have eaten them alive. And I think some people could have gotten out there and they would have just driven these guys crazy. And Jeff knew the right moment, and he would always have a great joke to crack. And my favorite, some of my favorite moments are when he delivers a great line and Bill looks it over and he goes, "No, that was funny." And George gives him a hard time. He's always asking him for a tell us a joke, tell us a joke. But there's this great moment where Bill is waxing poetically about Mount Fuji. They're on their way up to see it, and it has this mystical mountain with magical powers, and they can't wait to go there. They've wanted to see this their entire lives. And then Jeff says, "And I hear there's a gift shop." And the way he delivers it is just right on the money. And, you know, I feel like they're, you know, obviously we have these, we're appealing to a certain demo, but I think Jeff opens us to an entire new audience who can watch the show through his eyes and experience this trip. You know, and that's what this is all about. It is inviting you in at any age to come and enjoy this trip with these guys, because it is, it is so fun and so funny, and I can't wait for people to see it. I really can't. So
once again, the participants on this journey: William Shatner, Henry Winkler, George Foreman, Terry Bradshaw, and Jeff Dye. They are the folks that are exercising their bucket list and their travel gene simultaneously in Better Late Than Never. And the premiere is this coming Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on NBC. Check your locals for the NBC channel in your area. For more details about the program online, www.nbc.com. www.nbc.com. And stay with NBC and the network's NBC Universal for ongoing continuing coverage, most of it live, of the Summer Olympic Games from Rio de Janeiro. Coverage continues and goes into this Sunday night with the closing ceremonies on NBC. Check your local listings for the NBC station in your area, as well as the networks of NBC Universal, from MSNBC to USA to Telemundo and NBC Universal. They're carrying that coverage through Sunday night from Rio. Jason Ehrlich, executive producer of Better Late Than Never, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations to you and your crew for what promised to be a very exciting, wonderful journey that hopefully will inspire a lot of other people to exercise their travel direction in life and make something happen.
Thank you, Simon. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Pleasure to have you on, Jason. Take care. All the greatest, and have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Thank you. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Jason Ehrlich, executive producer of Better Late Than Ever, joining us live from Los Angeles. Well, the answer is these classic trivia question, but first, some thoughts from the fine people at Audible.com. If you're an Amy Schumer fan, you might know that she has a book out called The Girl with the Lower Back Tattoo, and now that book is an audiobook. And you can hear it for yourself and keep it for yourself through Audible.com. Audible.com is a leading provider of spoken digital audio and entertainment. It has over 108,000 titles to choose from. And the best thing is you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now, through Blog Talk Radio. So if you sign up at this URL, audibletrial.com/televised, that's audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook like Amy Schumer's New Tone, or something else you like in any different genre, and a one-month trial of the service. And because Audible is done by Amazon.com, you know the customer service is off the charts and out of this universe. So give Amy or give your favorite audiobook a call and do so with this URL, audibletrial.com/televised. Nothing to lose, everything to gain. One free audiobook, 30-day trial, free, customer service great. Like I said, it's a great way to get yourself in the world of super sound entertainment, information, inspiration. How do you do it? Through Audible.com. And now it's time for the answer to this week's classic trivia question. Sorry to say, nobody won, so no Twin Peaks FAQ to a possible winner. The question was to impose me over the last 2 weeks. In what year did Dragnet launch on television? The answer is 1951. Now, for those of you that think it was 1952 a year later, you will be very surprised. But guess what? The first episode of the series, called The Human Bomb, starring Jack Webb, of course, and Sergeant Joe Friday, and featuring a performance by Raymond Burr, a very rare guest shot on television at the time. He was more in movies. Well, that appeared on, get this, December 16th, 1951. And that was 2 years after Dragnet premiered first on radio. So the answer, Dragnet starred on NBC on television in 1951, December 16th to be exact. Well, that's the answer to this week's classic trivia question. We'll have a new question for you on Monday's show. And if you know the answer and you're first with it, you can win Twin Peaks FAQ, the wonderful new book by Applause about the ABC classic series of the 1990s that is coming back next year on Showtime. Created and written by Mark Frost and David Lynch. And in the revival, Lynch will be directing all the episodes. I understand photography has been completed, and it should be very interesting to see how Showtime plays it. And many of the original cast, including Clive McLaughlin, are back for the revival. So we'll post a question for you on Monday's show. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. You can also tweet the answer at #TWBT. That's #TWBT. That Twitter option made available by the wonderful people at Hopscotch, the folks that invite you to create your own social soundtrack. So check out our classic trivia question on Monday's show. If you missed Monday's episode, no problem. We'll post the question on Tuesday on my Facebook page and on my own Twitter hashtag at UBCSimonTWBT. So be in and win. You never know. You might win the Twin Peaks FAQ book, and I promise you, it'll be terrific reading. When we come back, we're going on to Vancouver, British Columbia, just a step above from Los Angeles, and we'll speak with a member of an Emmy Award-winning family that's given us so much television over the last 30 years. He's Emmy winner John Tinker, whose latest work premiered this past Sunday on Hallmark Channel, Chesapeake Shores. We'll get to him after we pause the bottom of the hour for Rabbi Identification. You are connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Talking Pictures with Paul Booth. Check it out tonight, 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio. And the best of BTR is always available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to half hour number two of our 90-minute edition this Friday afternoon of Tomorrow We Televise, or Friday morning as the case may be, if it is you on the West Coast. I'm Applebaum with you live. We're 3 hours earlier than normal on this Friday. Happy to have you aboard at the earlier time. If you have a question or comment for our guest ahead in the hour ahead, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That number good anywhere you catch us across the country around the globe on BTR. Or you can use our chat room, SimonApple04 Renee. We have guests 515, 538 in the room. You will find that chat room at blogtalkradio.com/televise. About 30 years ago, the next person you're going to hear won an Emmy Award in the area of writing for a drama series. He collaborated with Tom Fontana and John Macias on an episode of St. Elsewhere. And it's not surprising it happened because he is a member of a famous family that made St. Elsewhere happen. His father is Grant Tinker, the man that ran NTM, Mary Tyler Moore's production company, where we had the Mary Tyler Moore Show, Rhoda Phillips, so many great comedy shows, as well as Hill Street Blues and Lou Grant. And his brother is Mark Tinker, the man who has had a wonderful producing and directing writing career of his own, including wonderful work on the classic ABC series NYPD Blue. The man you're about to hear has done his own work as well on such programs as The Practice, Chicago Hope. He co-created a long-running CBS song with Amy Brenneman, Judging Amy, and his show for NBC, which didn't run too long, but you should check it out if you can, The Book of Daniel. Last week, his latest work came on the air through Hallmark Channel. It's Just Big Shores, their brand new Sunday night drama and the only new scripted series they will introduce in 2016. Joining us live from Brand Cooper, British Columbia, and another NFA exclusive, executive producer and showrunner of Just Big Shores, Emmy winner John Tinker. John, it's an honor to have you with us.
How are you? Good to be here.
Very, very fine, thank you, and great to have you aboard. And what's been the reaction to your new work?
Well, wait a second, Simon. First of all, my gosh, you don't need to feel that old. 30 years ago, goodness. Wow. But it's good to be here, life-affirming Friday. Isn't that what you're calling this?
Yes, certainly am. And so you've done a lot of scripts that affirm life very well.
Oh, good. Well, first, a correction and a clarification. I did not participate in the making of the TV movie, which aired last Sunday for Chesapeake Shores, which I loved, and is, you know, the primary reason I was drawn to this project. It was written by Nancy Silvers and directed by Martin Wood, Martin, who stayed with the series, of course. And when I saw it and was approached about doing this, it was the combination of that good work and my desire to work at a place like Hallmark that has a real idea of who they are, who their audience is. And, you know, some might call them anachronistic, and I call them brave because they stick to their values that have made that company, Hallmark and Crown Media, such an admired company for just about 100 years. So I'm thrilled to be a part of this now. And the reaction has been very good, at least if you are a believer in what gets tweeted and put out there on social media. I just couldn't say more about this show. So let me know what you want to talk about, and we'll get underway.
Well, let's start with that, Chesapeake. What piqued your interest in doing this series?
Well, you know, I really enjoy writing character, and so much of television now, while it is about character, I have my own values and my own parameters in which I like to operate, and I just felt that there was really no other place to do a show like this. Shows like Parenthood and Brothers and Sisters, I haven't seen them recently on network. There's a show premiering on NBC, which I think is probably well outside those parameters I just referenced when it comes to what I'd like to write. So when I was approached by the folks at Hallmark, I was enthused because I really want to write television that has a broad appeal and television that I think is serving a well underserved portion segment of the television viewing audience where families can gather around and watch this show and be entertained, but also be encouraged and be enlightened at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And this is not just a family drama. This is a family drama on a lot of different levels, multi-generational, people at various points in their life. Why don't you got bored doing it after the two-hour opening movie, the two-hour opening episode? How did you decide to shape the show, and how did you decide to sort of blend the different directions that this family is going in together into a series?
Well, you're right. There are a lot of different directions. There is the romance, which is pivotal to this show, between Jesse Metcalf and Megan Ory, who play Trace and Abby. But there is the multi-generational element, and we had 8 episodes in which to really introduce and engage our viewers with this family and with Trace Riley and the folks of Chesapeake Shores. So it was decided that we would take those 8 episodes and call them summer, and we would bookend it between the 4th of July weekend, which is where the first two-hour movie ends, and then end the 8 episodes with Labor Day weekend, and we would put the family there for various and sundry reasons back on the shores and really spend time getting to know these folks and talking about them. The narrative is primarily on this show, the first 8 episodes in particular, about emotion and character rather than action and plot. There is a lot of plot and there is a lot of story, but we wanted the characters really to be at the fore, because, you know, I was listening to Jason Ehrlich before, and he talked about, you know, his host Jeff Dye leading these guys through various adventures, and said he was clueless. And I think that's sort of an attractive quality, because we're all sort of clueless here. And as families, we're all trying to reach out and help one another while live our own lives. And families are certainly dysfunctional, and not to get too hoity-toity, but, you know, Tolstoy said all happy families are alike, and each unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. So hopefully we can have folks tune in to this show and relate to the characters and to the family and the various traumas and stories that we'll be depicting and they'll be going through.
Mm-hmm. Throughout your career, you've had situations where you have been like the sole creator or the sole person running the show. And others, I mentioned Judging Amy, you were the co-creator. In this case, you got Cheryl Woods, who is the person who wrote the original novels and is also serving as executive producer with you on the series. What's it been like working with her and also working with someone like Martin, who has been has done a number of different Hallmark series as a director and is going to be directing a lot of the episodes? So I'm just curious what's it been like working with like a pretty core group of people.
Well, I think that's the best part of being a showrunner, is finding a core group of people with whom you can collaborate. And this has been a really fabulous experience, beginning with Cheryl, who obviously wrote the book series. She's been terrific. She's allowed us to take these babies she's created and dress them up for the TV series, which, while being faithful in spirit to the characters and even some of the very characteristics those folks have, you know, because it is a television series, we'll be telling slightly different stories, though not straying too far if we can help it. She's been fabulous. She's generous and she's positive, and she has such an incredible following. We couldn't have asked for a better author with whom to collaborate. As far as directors, you know, beginning with Martin Wood, who directed the movie, he'll direct 4 of the 8 that we have. He's fabulous. I'm really tired of carrying him, but I'll do what I can. He's a fabulous guy, such a wonderful eye and a big heart, as does Peter DeLuise, who's just a wonderful person, and Ann Wheeler, who also directed 2 of the episodes. So between Ann, Martin, and Peter, we have people directing behind the camera who are really wonderful to watch work and watch their work. And then, again, it's no one person does this stuff. There are a few people in television who do, but I think that it really, for me, is the best thing about it, a collaborative experience and allow everyone to bring their best. Between, you know, the cast and props and greens and grips and electricians and PAs, and costume and you name it. I mean, they've all really just stepped forward here, and I think in part because they love the show itself, what we're trying to do and what we're trying to say, and most importantly, what we want to explore, and at the end of the day, come out of it with a hopeful message, with something that will make you feel hopefully a little bit better, and not unrealistically so, but realistically so. And toward that end, I think Hallmark has been wonderfully supportive and encouraging when it comes to making the show just a little bit different than the other shows that they have currently on the air as series. And that's not a qualitative judgment. It's simply we're doing it a little bit different. And it'll be interesting to see how the audience responds. I think it's really hard to quantify it. But it does have a different feel. It has a different look. It has a different pace. It has a different style of storytelling. And we've gone for something here that's just a little bit off-center from what Hallmark does, and yet we have maintained all of the Hallmark values and quality that they've strived for so long and have delivered. And their audience knows that, and their audience is loyal, and we appreciate it. We don't just look at them as numbers. They've sort of become family. I'm new to social media, but already I feel this tribal quality to this, and this village quality, maybe that's a better word. And they're all very supportive, and they all are really generous, genuine people looking to be encouraged and to look at the better side of life, and to look at the values that are uplifting, and to not be discouraged or they just want to have come out on the sunny side of the street.
I think this show delivers that. John. I cut you off quickly.
No, that's it. I think without being saccharine, I think the show does deliver, does eventually wind up on the sunny side of the street, on balance. This is a real, for us, a real family drama that has characters I think everyone will relate to. I think it has characters that we can see ourselves in, and, we would like to continue as seasons progress to explore those characters deeper in who they are and what they do and what they want out of life.
Chesapeake Shores is Hallmark Channel's latest original production. You can find it Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. We are talking with executive producer and showrunner John Tinker. Like I said, 30 years ago, he won the Emmy Award for writing an episode of a great classic that his father was involved with, Grant Tinker, as head of NBC at the time, and NTM, I should say, Saint Elsewhere. Join us live from Vancouver, British Columbia, this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum with you on that other coast known as New York. If you have a question or comment for John, ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up on next Friday's episode, our regular time, that's 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, we'll speak to a new face on the television scene. His name is Ben Kitai. He's the executive producer, writer, and director of a new series coming to Crackle next month. It's called Startup. It's about a subculture of Miami that wants to break out of that subculture and make it big in the world of high technology, but it may come as a price. Ben Kitai joins me next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. And we'll also talk very soon to one of the breakout stars of MTV. You know her from Girl Code. Her name is Nicole Byer, and she's about to star in her own original comedy series called Loosely Exactly Nicole. It premieres on MTV in September, and we will have her coming up on Monday, August 29th. We'll have that episode start a half hour later than normal, 3:30 p.m. Eastern, 12:30 p.m. Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. When you mean, John, that your program is off-center, where does the off-center come from?
Well, I think that we're going to be exploring these characters in a it's really hard, Simon, to I haven't sat back and thought, what's the verbiage here? But I think we're just trying to do it in a slightly more Yeah, gosh, what's the word? I don't want to be pejorative of what I see in Hallmark, because Hallmark puts out a show and movies that I admire. But when we came in, we wanted to try and do something that was perhaps a little more honest. I don't know. All I know is that when I sat down to write, when I talked to others about writing this show, those people who contributed, Nancy Silvers and a young writer named Kirsten Hansen, and when we the directors, we just wanted to come from an emotional place, and rather than approach the story from, well, what happens next? What happens next? And then what happens? We wanted to approach it from a place of well, if the person is going through a particular emotional event, what might they then be led to do? And what happens when they bump into their brother who thinks they're doing something that they should do otherwise? And we always wanted to come from an emotional place. I think a lot of the Hallmark product is story driven, and is, again, is a, not to say there isn't a lot of story in this. There's a lot of character, and there's a lot of nuanced, subtle storytelling that we tried to bring to this. You know, I think it's an, if I can speak for Hallmark, it's in an effort to just broaden out what they already do, as with any other network or cabler who has a variety of programs. I think, though, that, again, if you look at their channel, what they're trying to do is maintain in a very competitive marketplace who they are. And if I could reference my father for a moment, when he went to NBC in 81, 82, you know, it was the network had fallen to a distant third. And he went in there not looking to just put on programs he thought would get ratings. He wanted to look to put programs on that channel that would quality programs that would entertain and things that resonated with him and he felt would resonate with other people. He wasn't just pandering. He was really engaged and really felt it important to put on good shows. And it didn't matter to him whether or not folks thought they would get big ratings, but in the 5 years that he was there, he took the network from that distant third to first. And he had a saying when he first got there, and in fact, I have Megan Ori, the character of Abby, quote this at one point. He said, "First be best, then be first." And again, I think that's what Hallmark strives to do. They strive to be best. And I'm encouraged, looking at the numbers that they get and the critical acclaim that they get, and the loyalty and devotion that they get by Hallmark. And I think that's what Hallmark tries to do. I think they know who they are. I think they know who they want to appeal to. And this show is in part an attempt, I think, to appeal to some other viewers who might not otherwise come to Hallmark because they have an erroneous, ill-conceived notion of what this channel is. Again, you know, I don't know that anyone could run a network the way that my father ran it, by that I mean off of sort of a taste and a commitment to quality. I mean, yes, everyone sets out to do great work, but you get lost in the forest for the trees often. And unless you have someone like Bill Abbott and Michelle Vickery and Randy Pope all there knowing where they are and each looking not to get lost and to move the network in a certain direction – Your quality is going to suffer and the shows are going to suffer. I think they know where they want to go, and at the same time, you can't stay stagnant, so they're trying to open up and have a greater appeal and just let folks know they're doing something slightly different over on the Hallmark Channel with Chesapeake Shores. And again, not a qualitative judgment at all. It's just slightly different than what they might see. You know, I've seen a lot of folks comparing the show on Twitter and such to Cedar Cove, which was canceled to the great dismay and sadness to a lot of their viewers, and they're saying, well, this show isn't Cedar Cove. No, it's not Cedar Cove, and it's not signed, sealed, and delivered, and it's not Goodwitch. That's what makes a great network, though, is different programs delivering different things but maintaining a standard of quality. And as I said, it's in part what drew me to this show and to the network. It was very important to me that I do this at this point in my career. I made a purposeful choice to come here because of what they were talking to me about and what they said they wanted to do. And I'm grateful to all those guys there, to the network. And I hope it'll be borne out in viewership, because we're really trying to deliver something quality and something that's insightful to the Hallmark viewers, who I think are part of a, as I said, an underserved, thirsty audience for programming like this.
By the way, we're welcome guest 637 to our chat room. If you have a question or comment, put it in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. Back in the day of St. Elsewhere, there was an extraordinary cast, but we didn't know how extraordinary we were to get. People like Denzel Washington, you know, getting into movies and winning an Oscar, or people like David Morse, or Howie Mandel, and what he would do later on as a game show host with Deal or No Deal, or Mark Harmon, who is now the star of the most popular show on broadcast television, NCIS. In Chesapeake Shores, you're working with a mix of people we know and people who may have not seen a show like with Megan Ory Once Upon a Time on ABC, we may not know. And when you have, for example, a wonderful Academy Award nominee like Diane Ladd, we all remember from Al Doesn't Live Here Anymore, and films like Wild at Heart, you know, in a major cast role, what's it been like for you to work with people like her and Treat Williams, a Golden Globe winner? We remember his film roles, we remember his series Everwood on the WB. What's it been like to sort of have new talent and people who have become established, you know, acting faces, if you will, in the same cast?
Well, I think it's astute and accurate that you draw that comparison to St. Elsewhere. I feel a bit like that with this cast. You have some very seasoned actors, as we did on St. Elsewhere with, I'm completely blanking, but Billy Daniels and Ed Flanders and people like that. You know, they were terrific. And then a lot of new faces. And I feel very similar about this. At the top of this call, I believe I said, I can't talk enough about this show. And primarily, I can't talk enough about it because of this cast. I've not been so excited about a cast, so in love with a cast, as I am here. I think that these actors are just getting started, and I think these characters are just beginning to get revealed, and I couldn't dream of a bunch of folks to reveal those characters. I came here to Vancouver. I'd never heard this word before. Maybe it's used in Los Angeles and around the country where other filming is done. But they said, come on over and play. They said that to other actors. I'd never heard that. But that's in part what makes them so great. They just love their craft, and they want to play, and they commit, and they explore. And so often we'll write things for them. And the greatest joy is when you watch dailies and something comes back and you see it done better. That's always helpful, and that's always a relief, but done slightly differently and slightly off of what you thought they'd do, and it's just surprising and joyful. The cast is remarkable. We don't have a weak link. I love them all. They've become there's a thing that I think happens when good writers and good actors get together, and it's just sort of a symbiosis, and sooner or later each of you says to the other, stop listening at my window, stop tapping my phone, stop reading my mail, because you get who they are, they get who you are, and it all starts to meld into one and become really one great and powerful experience that I think absolutely translates to screen. Candice Elzinga and a lot of other folks helped to put this cast together, and it's such a huge part, as you know, Simon, of a show's success. You know, to take nothing away from the talented writers of Friends, that show had the cast. And in a similar vein, you know, L.A. Law and you obviously can go on, those shows by and large are because of this cast, and we have an incredible cast, and not bad to look at either. And so with the veterans, you've talked about Diane Ladd, who was fabulous, and Treat, and Barbara Niven, and then a lot of younger talent as well. It is like a family. It has become like a family, both in front of the camera and behind.
Speaking of family, John, your family, individually and collectively, have been responsible for some of the greatest television ever. You could put Hill Street Blues.
And some of the worst.
And some of the worst, but in large part, some of the best. Mary Tyler Moore Show, Bob Newhart Show, Hill Street Blues, Saint Elsewhere, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What do you think of what is going on now in what some are calling now the second, maybe the greatest golden age of television, where you see a program like Mr. Robot, where a Sam Esmail, who has never done television before, can write and direct his own work, or other people who are coming from independent film or coming from other or writing, whether it's plays or books, can get the chance now not only to create a show, but to do the show, to write, direct, produce it, and do it in sort of their own homage style, the way the Orson Welles tried to do, you know, or Steven Spielberg does now in film. What do you think of this era as you see it coming from, you know, the family and what you've produced?
Well, I think it's hugely exciting. I think in large part it's obviously propelled by the technology and technological advances we've all made, making things much more accessible in how you do them and who can do them. So I think it opens up a wide gate for folks to enter in and explore. You know, you have various platforms like Netflix and Amazon that are allowing people, writers, directors, producers, actors, a chance to really do what they want to do, and while giving them some guidelines, stepping back and letting those good people do what they know how to do. And I think that is the secret to whether you're running a network or running a show or you're running General Motors. You get the very best people to do their very best work and let them alone. And I think more often than not, you'll get a great result.
Chesapeake Shores is Hallmark Channel's latest original drama series and one worth viewing Sunday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on the Hallmark Channel. Check your locals for where that network is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.hallmarkchannel.com. That's www.hallmarkchannel.com. John Tinker, executive producer, showrunner of Chesapeake Shores, thank you not only for joining us today, but I also want to thank you and your brother Mark and your father Grant for all the wonderful hours of tremendous television you have given the American public for so many years and decades. And it's been a delight and a pleasure to have you on. Let's have you back on soon. And I wish you all the very best with this show and whatever else you do for Hallmark and beyond.
Well, Simon, thank you. It's been a blessing and a privilege to be able to do it. So we thank you. So it's good to be on. I look forward to talking to you soon.
You got it. You have a date for it. Take care, John. All the greatest. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you, Simon. You too.
Take care. John Tinker, Emmy Award-winning executive producer and showrunner of Chesapeake Shores, once again, Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on the Hallmark Channel. When we come back, our annual visit with the head of the New York Television Festival, which is getting hotter and greater than ever, Terrence Gray, and some final thoughts about an incredible person and what he did to transform the way we see political talk, John McLaughlin. That is all coming up after we pause before the top of the next hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, the best internet radio on the planet, more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. And coming up in October, you can check out a special episode of Be Simply Radio with Suzanne Toro. Suzanne and her guests give you the Be Simple facts and the Be Simple philosophy coming up on October 6th. That'll happen at 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, a special edition of Be Simply Radio exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, you can get the best of BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com and check out BTR programming, ourselves included, on podcasts, both at iTunes and if you have Apple TV, the iTunes Podcast app. If you don't have Apple TV, check it out at an Apple store near you, including the brand new Apple store that opened this week at the World Trade Center, the World Trade Center Oculus site, or go online. Welcome back to the Marvy Televine, and welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Applebaum here with you, normally on Fridays 3 hours later at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, but we decided to go a little earlier than normal. We hope you're having a great time, whether you are on breakfast time on the West Coast or well past lunch now on the East Coast. 85 degrees at the top of the hour. Wonderful guests coming your way in this half hour. We invite you to be part of the program, so give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple Zero Program 04 by name. This program started over 9 years ago, first Monday of August, 2007, and our first subject was an event that a lot of people outside this city didn't know about, but a lot of people, particularly who wanted to make television happen in this city, did, the New York Television Festival. And over the last 9 years, it has not only spurred on an independent television movement, but it has helped get a circuit of similar festivals happening around the country. The latest of them happening this Saturday, the Norfolk TV Festival in Long Island. Well, the New York Television Festival goes to year number 12 from October 24th to the 29th in Manhattan, in Tribeca, and in Chelsea, and it promised to be the very best one yet. It has been our pleasure over the last 9 years to have the people from the New York Television Festival on this program, and once again, I'm delighted to be joined by the executive director and founder, Terrence Gray. Terrence, it's a pleasure again to have you with us and to help us kick off our 10th year on the air.
Simon, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me back, and I'm excited to be here and excited about what we're going to be presenting in a couple of months here.
And you're going to be presenting not only quite a lot, but you're doing it on really a high for your enterprise. Everything from alumni getting their own series, such as Animals on HBO, alumni getting involved in the new series CW No Tomorrow coming up in October. And you were just telling me before we went on the air that there's another breakthrough that's happened with your venture.
Yeah, well, just yesterday, one of our great alumni, Ted Tremper, and his show Shrink, got greenlit for a series on CISA. So we could not be more thrilled for just a great director and creator in Ted. And CISA is also a big partner of the festival, and they've been very supportive. To see that combination getting together is very exciting, and we're thrilled for everybody involved.
And before we get to the festival itself, I wanted to follow up on another big thing that happened this year, which is the festival, unlike others, has its own production company. And finally, the very first venture from that company, The Jams, not only premiered, it premiered through, in part, Netflix. What is happening with that production company, and where is it going?
Well, we're hoping to grow it over. We're hoping to do a lot more things like The Jams. I mean, that was such an incredible first outing as an independent series, and being partnered with The Orchard and those guys was great. And so it's gotten a lot of great reviews. It's on Netflix right now. We have fingers crossed, and we're hopeful that we can build the audience to a place where there may be a consideration about more episodes or a second season. And so that's what's happening with that particular show. But in general, we're looking to work with more of our partners, our development partners at the festival, and help guide and produce some of the top festival artists coming out so that we can take those projects further into development and ultimately into series. And that's sort of the goal. The goal is to get the festival artists into series we've had a lot of success stories over the last couple of years.
And something else has also happened with that, because now it's the New York Television Festival, and now you have all these other festivals like Series Fest and Norfolk, which gets on the air tomorrow, and ITVS now in Vermont, et cetera. And something very exciting is going on. And again, your festival is leading the way, Terrence, which is that pilots from your festival are now going to the other festivals. Dead John, which was a winner last year, that was at Series Fest later this spring. Rip World Chronicles, another show that did very well with the festival, it's now been at two or three other festivals since. So now we're starting to see this circuit where what you're producing, it's not just a one and done. They're getting an opportunity to take that crowd reaction to what they've done with your festival and take it elsewhere, which perhaps allows more of a possibility of that becoming a series down the road.
Well, yeah, I think, look, anytime an independent producer and creator can get a platform and can be marketing, that is great for the independent television movement. And that's really what we started, you know, 12, 13 years ago. So in terms of the other festivals coming online, I think that's a great thing in terms of shows getting promotion and getting on those platforms. And it's going to help ultimately in the sales of that show. I also think, like, you know, as you said, we had a big year. We had more submissions than ever, you know, thousands of submissions that came in. So it's getting increasingly difficult to get into NYTF, to be accepted. So I think on the other end, when people are starting out and they may be looking to raise money independently to make their pilot, if they can say to their investors, look, there are multiple, you know, shots at the apple here. In other words, there are multiple festivals that we might be able to get into. I think that that's a good rationale for an investor to say, like, look, it's not just this one shot, which may ultimately be really difficult, but we have a number of shots where we might be promoted and celebrated and have an opportunity to try to move forward.
Terrence Gray is the executive director of the New York Television Festival Annual Edition Number 12. Comes up October 24th to 29th here in New York. If you have a question or comment for Terrence, who's with us in New York this half hour on our earlier than normal Friday edition of Tomorrow Be Televised this Friday, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Or you in the chat room, Simon Apple 04 Berlin, get 515 in the room. As you said, Terrence, more entries than ever. What was the factor in terms of determining the 60-plus, and that's the most you've ever had, the 60-plus entries that are in your independent pilot competition?
Well, I think that the factors haven't changed. I mean, we're looking for people that have great ideas, great voices, that are, you know, consistent in what they do, both in the tone and in the pacing of their show. But really, what we're looking for, great characters and great worlds, and we're looking for people that are showing that talent. And I think this year, it's been incredible. I think this is by far the highest level that we've ever had. I think it's incredibly diverse. I don't want to misquote these, but I think something like 59% of all the projects are helmed by women, which is very exciting. I think around 42% have a person of color or diversity in the creative team or the lead in the show, and I think that is incredibly important. But also, those are the best shows. And I think the idea that new voices and diverse voices are coming into the marketplace is great for everyone. And we're very proud of all the projects that are in the festival. But I think that is a growing trend, and it's something that we're seeing from our community and just the great work that's being done.
We're also seeing, in addition, Terrence, we're seeing a lot of work from Chicago. We're seeing work from places like Atlanta, Louisville, Kentucky, Canada, which did pretty good, by the way, last year. I mentioned Ripple Chronicles, which comes out of Canada. London, England, some other international places, and especially, believe it or not, Brooklyn. And it just seems that it rectifies the fact that Brooklyn is fast becoming the new mini Hollywood. There's I believe last year there were only two entries, Dead John and Black Rose. We both featured them not only on this program, but also on BK Live on Brick TV. And it seems that Brooklyn has really poured in loud and strong this time around.
I think that's right. And I think whether it's Brooklyn, which is home turf for us, or whether it's places like Chicago and Atlanta, where we've been there and we've spoken with those artists and we encourage those communities to participate and to submit. And I think, as I've said on your show before, you know, we don't have an overall title sponsor like an American Express or whomever. And so we have to do it a little bit more retail in terms of going out and letting people know about the opportunities. And so one of the things that we try to do, and I think we do, is when the producers come to the festival, we treat them on the same par as the sponsors, as the people in the industry. And I think that a lot of them have had success, and a lot of them, we treat them like professionals. They have a great experience at the festival, and they go back to places like Atlanta, and they go back to places like Chicago, and they say, look, these guys are going to protect your work. They're going to treat you like pros, and they're going to put you in a position to have great relationships in the industry and potentially sell your show. And so I think that that is something that has worked very well for us and something that we're going to continue to do to be a champion of the independent artist.
Now, one of the great things about the festival, and it's been there for a pretty long time, is that the independent pilot competition, where these 60-plus pilots are involved, it's not the only way that people who want to get into television break in can participate. You have one project called, it's called NYTVF Scripts, which is something new. What's that all about?
Yes. In fact, we're doing this in real time, Simon. We just announced officially our 21 comedy pilot script selections for the festival. And it's incredibly, you know, we had 1,000 submissions, so you're talking about the top 2%. It's incredibly difficult and competitive to get in, but I could not be more proud of the scripts that are in the festival. The writers are incredibly strong. And we really look forward to sharing these scripts with all of our industry, agency, management company, all of the partners of the festival. And I think that these writers are going to have a fantastic festival.
Mm-hmm. Now, about a week and a half ago, Participant Media announced a project with you called Works in Progress, which is another way that people who have everything from a treatment to maybe some episodes already in the can be part of. Now, a couple of days ago, Participant Media announced that Pivot is going off the air, effective end of the year. However, at the same time they did announce that, they also said, hey, we want to do more television as well as film. First of all, what is Works in Progress all about? And since the Pivot announcement, has there been any conversation with Participant Media about making sure this happens?
Well, firstly, it is 100% happening, and we are looking forward to getting all of the submissions. Participant is 100% behind what we're doing. I certainly won't speak for them, and I'll let them answer questions about their strategy, but I would say that Works for Progress is about whether or not you have a drama script or a docuseries or doc footage in the pro-social space, and there's a number of different areas where Participant has done incredible work in their films, in their documentary films, and really this is an opportunity for those producers, those writers, those people who are passionate about the same space that Participant is in, to come to the festival, to be selected as a finalist, to potentially have the opportunity of meeting with these executives and getting into, you know, potentially getting into development with them. And so for us, it's an incredibly exciting opportunity. I really think it's an ability for us to reach out to a lot of different communities. Obviously, our community will be very excited about it, but I think by extension, there are other communities where this is a very tangible opportunity, and we're excited to see what we're going to get in.
Mm-hmm. Who are some of the not corporate sponsors, like Mary says, but who are some of the network and TV players that are involved in the festival this year? I mean, in the past, you've had HBO. You've had Starz, which is going to be acquired by Lionsgate, which is trying every which way to get into television, and then some. You've had Channel 4. You've had other production companies. Who are some of the folks involved this year?
Well, we're going to make our full announcement soon, but there are great companies like CISO and Comedy Central and Participant and True TV and Red Arrow and all, you know, many of them are returning. Some of them are new and you know, as you know, Simon, we're going to be, we usually make a number of announcements on, on the way into the festival, but it is a number of television networks. It is a number of, big digital players. It is the agencies. It is the management groups. Companies like IFC, who have been so wonderful to us, you know, since the beginning of the festival's existence. And there's just a number of great industry partners who are behind us and who have shown a tremendous amount of support for the independent production and creative community.
And I believe Bento Box, the independent animation company, does Bob's Burgers on Fox and other shows. I think
exactly.
They're also involved with it.
They are, and they have a development deal with us. They're known for doing such great work. They're incredibly cool people. They are very, very open to the great artists in our community, and I think it is hopefully going to be the continuation of a great partnership that I'm hopeful that we can grow in the future.
The New York Television Festival, year number 12, happens October 24th to 29th at various areas in Manhattan, including the wonderful Helen Mills Theater on West 26th Street in Chelsea and several places in Tribeca as well. Oh, and also the SCA Theater, wonderful place, School of Visual Arts Theater on 23rd Street between 8th and 9th. And if you've never gone there, it is a wonderful, wonderful place for screenings, presentations, panels, all sorts of stuff. Which is quite a bit, by the way, during the upfront and the digital content new front this year. Terrence Gray is the executive director of the festival. He is back with us again. He's our wonderful, always August guest with us right here on Tomorrow We Tell Live, live from New York. Simon Applebaum with you as well. If you have a question or comment for Terrence, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You do panel sessions. You do other sessions as well in terms of screenings. What do you see as the subjects? For example, diversity on television mentioned earlier. We've got equity crowdfunding. We're starting to see a lot of interest now in terms of trying to get shows equity crowdfunded or crowdfunded with the likes of Kickstarter, Seed and Speed, which has got the New Voice crowdfunding rally going on. What do you see as some of the topics that you'll be covering at some point during the festival?
Well, I think all of those things that you just mentioned could certainly be panels at the festival. I think one of the things where there's a tremendous amount of energy right now is in the comedy programming space and how that exists on many different levels, on many different platforms, and it's doing it very successfully. So I think there'll be discussions around comedy and the different types of comedy that are being made. I think there'll be subject matter around how stuff is getting funded. I think there could be subject matter around acquisitions, particularly in sort of the premium digital space of a Netflix or an Amazon or Hulu, like, or CISO. Like, what is happening? We're going out to the open market, really, in the U.S. and having conversations and doing deals. So I think there's continually a lot of movement and a lot of things that continue to evolve. And so I could see all of them, being subjects at the festival, including diversity, including all the strong female voices that are driving a lot of the conversation in television today. And so, we're in the process right now of working with our partners and putting panels together. But the great news is there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot of great things to talk about, and we'll be doing just that.
Yeah. Tying in both diversity and trying to encourage more work by women and women of color, ever since the Oscars and what happened there, we have seen the emergence of a number of groups trying to get more women writers, more women directors, and pilots or series produced by women there, whether it's We for She, who ran this program back in the spring, We Did It Together, the Project of Women in Film, and the Blacklist, the website that pairs screenwriters with producers. Many Oscar-winning films have come out of that over the last decade or so. Any chance that the festival might get involved with a project like a We for She, or We Did It Together, or Lifetime, or a similar project that's out to further more women of color doing programming?
Look, if the opportunity arose and we continually have conversations with all of our partners about what could we be doing in that arena. But I would say one of the things that we're proud of, and this goes with doing retail politics, going out and doing events in different cities and being boots on the ground, As I said at the top of the interview, we just announced our slate of pilots, and you know, 59% of those pilots are being led. The creative team is being led. Or has prominently positioned women on those shows. Now, they also happen to be the best shows. So I feel like in that area, closing in on 60%, that is a real statement about the great work that women are doing and that those shows are having a lot of success with us currently. And I think, you know, in terms of other diverse voices, we can all do better. But I think, again, our stat is somewhere in the low 40s. Of having diversity above the line. And so I think that we have it organically, that we are not doing a specific initiative to say diverse voices or voices of color or what have you. I would be incredibly open to doing that, but the fact that it is happening organically at such high levels and high percentages at the festival, I think is a testament to the NYTVF creative community, and the knowledge that if any person of any background does great work, they have the opportunity to get into this festival and to do really well with the buyers. And I think that is something that, as an organization, we're really proud of.
And over the years, to close things out, Terrence, your festival has been the jump-off point for a number of prominent series to get screened. Last year, Underground, the critically acclaimed WGN America series involving John Legend, got one of its first screenings at your festival. Do we know yet what new shows upcoming are going to get their screening time with you?
We don't know yet, Simon, but we are closing in on about 5 or 6 of them, and we will definitely get back to you and let you know as soon as possible. Aaron Day on our team, the festival director, runs NYTVF Primetime, and I'm being told that we have a number of events and a number of premieres that are really exciting that are lining up. And so we don't have that information yet, but I would say if people check back with NYTVF.com, that those announcements will be coming in the next couple of weeks.
The New York Television Festival, year number 12. It's the first and still the very, very best. And if you are in the New York area from October 24th to 29th, whether you are in or out of the television community, make it your business to be there. It is a very, very special event, and you will be doing your bit to encourage the next generation of great television. The New York Television Festival, year 12, October 24th to 29th, and various places at Manhattan, including the Helen Mills Theater in Chelsea and the SDA Theater on West 23rd Street between 8th and 9th Avenue. If you want more details about the festival, the screenings, the pilot screen, everything else too, here's where you go, as Terrence just said, www.nytvf.com. That's www.nytvf.com. A lot of great production companies and networks involved as well, so do check it out, like I said, if you're in the area. That's going to be part of an incredible lineup of conferences and events, maybe the most crowded ever in the history of television here in New York. But the NYTV Festival, it's the best, and if it wasn't the festival, we would not have the kind of independent television movement that we have now, including covering it in this program. Terrence Gray, Executive Director, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. Congratulations on what you've done these last 11 years and the 9 years that you've been part of this program. You're always our good luck charm. It is a pleasure to start the year with you, and it's been a pleasure to cover not only what your festival has been doing over these last 9 years, but also through you and other places, the incredible growth of scripted television involving many, many new talents that in many respects got their start through what you're doing. And we're looking forward to covering the festival again in whatever way we can. And you know, you always have an open door with us.
Simon, thank you so much. It's really an honor to come on this show every year. And you and I have been doing this together for all 9 years. And it's a really special thing. And thank you for your kind words about NYTVF. And it's just been a pleasure always having the ability to come on your show. And that you've been at the festival, it means a lot. And so thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. Anytime, Terrence. Thank you. Have a great weekend. All the very best to you, Aaron, and all your colleagues, and making something special happen this October.
That sounds great. Thank you, sir. Have a good weekend.
You're welcome, Terrence. You got it. Take care. Terrence Gray, the Executive Director of the New York Television Festival, joining us live from New York. One more time. It's October 24th to 29th, www.nytvf.com. www.thebigbandsound.com, the online place to find out all the information as it unfolds. Later on today, the four panelists who currently comprise the McLaughlin Group will gather at the studios of WSA-TV, the CBS station Washington, one last time, and they will sign off the McLaughlin Group after 34 years on the air. They will do so because the master of the program, the producer and host John McLaughlin, passed away earlier this year, as it should say, earlier this week, on Tuesday, at the age of 89, after several years of battle with prostate cancer. John McLaughlin literally transformed the way we think of that kind of program. Until he came along in 1982, political talk shows were basically what you watched on Washington television, Saturday nights at 7 or 7:30, or Sunday mornings when you didn't watch Meet the Press or This Week or Face the Nation. There were okay affairs with great journalists like Agronsky and Company or Inside Washington, but when John McLaughlin came along, he totally revolutionized the scene. Whether it was getting right down to basics with issue one, or whether it was the kind of panelists he had on, like Pat Buchanan and Robert Novak and the late Jack German and Morton Kondracki and Freddie the Beetle Barnes and Eleanor, I think you're swelling our clip, and so on and so forth. And the McLaughlin Group was not the only contribution John McLaughlin made to television. There was One-on-One, his wonderful interview series that, like the McLaughlin Group, spent many a weekend on public television stations across the country, thanks to WTGW in Chicago. And also McLaughlin, his five-year-old CNBC series, which ran every night of the week in prime time, live from New York with a wonderful studio audience. John McLaughlin believes the way to get people involved in discussion is to get them involved in a fair and fast and rapid kind of way, and to keep pressing and pressing and pressing and pressing until you got the truth. You heard it in his wonderful opening music from Sonic Images, and the McLaughlin Group, in addition, really forced political talk to be more than just inside the Beltway. It forced to be national pop culture, thanks to all those Saturday Night Live parodies, and in particular the way Dana Carvey interviewed and really encapsulated John McLaughlin. I watched the McLaughlin Group for many, many years on television. It was a Sunday morning favorite of mine, first on WNBC in New York, and then on WCBS the last couple years. My favorite McLaughlin moment was when the panelists all agreed, believe it or not, on a particular issue, and John McLaughlin said this maybe for the only time in his life. All four of you on the panel have said yes. I say no, so no! That was the kind of man John McLaughlin was, like him or hate him, and I liked him. I liked the fact that he always tried to not beat around the bush, not suffer food gladly, and make political talk something special around anyone's dinner table. And it was very apropos that today, the McLaughlin Group will gather one more time, and they will, as John McLaughlin himself said, turn the lights out on his own venture. He did it for 31 years. He did it until he was 89 years young, and he will be missed. And as of Sunday, so will his group. So, bye-bye, John. Thank you for all the great memories. Thank you for all the panelists. Thank you for all the talk. And thank you for being issue one with the American public through what you did on television. I want to thank all of our guests for a wonderful 90 minutes that we just had for you on this Friday. And we'll be back on Monday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, on Blog Talk Radio with John Goldwyn, the executive producer of the new Discovery Channel miniseries, Harley and the Davidsons. From the new Animal Channel special, Toucan Nation director Paul Erdahl, and Brady Thomas, the Emmy-winning director of House, now doing Quarry, starting next month on Cinemax, where he's executive producing and directing all the episodes. So join us. We'll have three episodes for you next week, all at our regular time. If you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast on iTunes.com. Follow me on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. And he goes Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator of this enterprise, Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow's Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. But tomorrow we televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. We're back Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Be safe and be great out there, and please think of the folks in Louisiana and what they're dealing with. If you can make a contribution, please do so. It'll be appreciated. And at least keep them in your prayers. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.